All right. Here's our next speaker, Tom Sauer, speaking on the role of increasing soil organic matter in enhancing plant available water.
Thank you, Joseph. It's a pleasure to be here today. I want to thank my co-authors, two students, Elizabeth and Matthew, who have been helping out with the measurements, and also for Cindy Camardella, who has brought me into organic agriculture research late in my career, so to speak. Well, we'll see. Maybe mid-career. My talk is going to have a little bit different format than most of the others. I'm going to be talking about plant available water, largely outside the context of organic agriculture, bringing organic agriculture in near the end, because I view it as a great opportunity and one of the benefits of organic agriculture can bring to agriculture in general. But first, I'm going to stand way back and look at the big picture. And the big picture is that we're going to need as many calories of food in the next 50 years that humans consumed in the last 500. This is due to our population growth, where we're going to have 9 billion people by 2050. So in largely the rest of my lifetime, there's going to be an ever-growing and urgent need to grow more food, to provide more nourishment, more calories to people. And we're not even doing that now. We have 15% of our population either malnourished or starving at present. This is a big challenge for agriculture. But, you know, there's good news, too. Our yields are increasing, right? A lot of, I'm from Iowa, so we talk a lot about corn, and you look at that yield trend for corn, looks pretty promising, and then you look out there at the end, and 2012, we had a drought. A lot of the discussion today is about resilience. Our agriculture is not very resilient, is it? All of those little dips in the yield lines, they're basically climate-related, floods and droughts. And we're not immune to those. So yes, the trend's going up. Why is it going up? Tremendous improvements in crop protection, nutrient management, plant breeding. But one thing I think that it's not improving is soil quality. It's almost overcoming the degradation that's happening in our soils with all of these improvements, are hiding the fact that the basic resource that we're using for agriculture, our soil, is likely degrading over this time. Yeah, climate change is important. I don't like to throw it into a talk where I talk about soil organic matter, because people immediately think, well, we're going to talk about carbon credits and other things, and that never seems to materialize. It's like the El Dorado of carbon. But the point is, climate change really isn't about averages, although the average precipitation in Iowa is increasing. Someone else showed a similar slide where you had a flood 1 year, 2 years later you've got a drought. And so talk about needing resilience. You need some system that can adapt to these widely changing, over short periods of time, widely changing conditions. I've already mentioned the fact that we've had soil degradation. You know, it's not a good sign as a soil scientist when Science Magazine devotes an article to the degradation of soils of the world. That's not a good thing, is it? The FAO has coined this term, sustainable intensification, and I think that's what it's about. We know we need to grow more food. We're already, our practices that we're using now are already degrading our soil resource. So now we have to grow more food. And does that mean more degradation? That's clearly not a sustainable trajectory. Listed in one of the chemical constraints is low organic matter, which is not where I would put organic matter, but anyway, a constraint to production for soil of low organic matter. Others have shown the same sort of things here today as well. Cultivation of our soils has led to a significant loss of organic matter. About 50% in the Midwest is a generally agreed upon number. Why is that? Well, one of the things we've also talked a lot about today is the effect of tillage. In the organic systems, we have a lot of tillage practices. There's been a fair bit of research of measuring CO2 fluxes from soil immediately after tillage operations. And these are figures showing those high peaks at the left of the graph. Those are the most aggressive tillage systems, the moldboard plow often, where they measure the CO2 flux right after the tillage operation, and there's a great increase in loss of carbon. In the Alkazi and Yin paper, the cumulative loss in those high disturbance systems was 40% greater than the systems with low disturbance, the no-till systems. In Iowa, we can explain about 50% of our surface soil carbon data just by knowing the elevation of the soil sample. This is due to a long history of erosion. And you look at that air photo, the light areas are the hilltops. And so we have incredibly deep organic-rich soils in the bottoms, but we have these depleted carbon areas in the hilltops, which on a dry year will grow what I call bonsai corn, which doesn't get very tall, not because there aren't nutrients there, but because there's no water there for the plants to grow. The latest 2007 Natural Resources inventory for Iowa had our average soil loss at 5.2 tons per acre per year. If we had 3% carbon, Cindy and I independently did the same sort of calculation here, but I used English units. 312 pounds of carbon per acre per year lost just due to erosion. We also measure CO2 flux from these cropping systems continuously using eddy covariance systems. So these are systems using micro measurements. They run year-round, 365 days a year. So we can measure a mean flux, the amount of carbon that's either going up or down in CO2 above the canopy. And then we estimate the removal, the net annual change, and for our corn-soybean rotation, which is typical, we still have a net loss of carbon. So if you think about those curves earlier, where they're flattening out, it's still going down in Iowa. And this is with a conventional chisel plow tillage system. And to kind of put that in perspective, that number, 920 pounds per acre per year, the Weston Post review of conversion from conventional to no-till agriculture put a range at 50 to 800 pounds of carbon per acre per year sequestration. So that's the potential. So you can see we're losing about as much each year as you could gain by converting to no-till in our system. Why all the interest in carbon? Carbon, carbon, carbon. If we're not getting paid for it, why do we care? If you don't believe in climate change or the need for carbon sequestration, well, carbon is, and you know, as soil scientists, sometimes I think we've kind of lost sight of the fact of where it fits into all of the biological and chemical cycles in the soil. And as a soil physics micrometeorologist, we also think about also the impact on physical properties of soil. So there's actually this report put out by the UNEP, an entire report just dedicated to the benefits of soil carbon. The one that I'm focusing on today is the water retention, which has come up again in several papers so far. Water use and yield. If we're going to push our production systems ever higher, there's a company that promotes 300 bushel per acre corn as sort of the goal for Iowa. We need water. This curve is from Arkley in 63. It's a review, and the x-axis is some sort of standardized transpiration, but essentially it's water use, and then they have yield and dry matter in the y-axis. The numbers in that review are the year of the study. So 10 is not 2010, it's 1910. This is old data we've known for a very long time. One of the ways that you get higher yield is you provide everything the crop needs, of course, including all the water it wants. So that's what these studies were all about. If you want to go higher, do you need more water? You need more water, right? So the question is, if we've handled all these crop protection issues, the fertility issues, what could become limiting? And what we think, at least in our high production systems in Iowa, we think we might be limited for water, something we've never thought about in our rain-fed agricultural system before. So yeah, the rainfall comes. We get on average about 39 inches now for the state of Iowa per year. It's going up an inch every decade, the last three decades. That's split between infiltration and runoff. We don't like runoff generally. Runoff means we're losing it from our production system and also flooding our cities and towns with it in extreme events and carrying pollutants, increasing erosion. So generally we like to have our water infiltrate. Because then it's available to the crop. We can use it in ET and increase our yield. The animation, by the way, which isn't working at all in my presentation, is involving some adjustments here. Soil water storage is one of the key factors in this. We can get it in the ground, but if it drains through the ground before the plant can reach it, it's not available water. So we need to store it in the ground, and that means we need good soil physical quality in order to store that plant available water. Just a quick review, our plant available water is between the permanent wilting point, which is how dry the soil gets before the plant can no longer extract water out of it, and then field capacity, which is sort of a guess about how fast the water drains from a soil due to gravity, so it's at the other end, the wet end. How much water is left there when the soil is very wet after a rainfall event, or an irrigation. Using a little bit more modern data, getting into 21st century here, that's a review by Mahdi Alkazi on the left for corn, and then some soybean data by Ermak on the right. It's a water use efficiency graph there on the left. You can see there's lots of different slopes, but it's basically the water use, irrigation or rainfall, and then the corn yield. The different slopes are related to the climate, other factors, but again and again, the same thing. If you want to get a higher yield, you're going to use more water. The Ermak study is interesting because they didn't measure water use, they just measured the water in the soil. But they found the same relationship. You were able to store more water in the soil profile, you had higher soybean yield. From our eddy-covariance work, where we measure CO2 flux, we also measure evaporation with the same stations. Reviewing 4 years of our data, ET is now 65% of our annual precipitation. So again, one of the things that people may be overlooking with these sort of really high yield goals is, where are we going to get that extra water? We're using 65% of it right now for ET in crop production, and that's about 10 bushels per acre for every inch of ET, and they want to get 300 bushels. We're at 200 now. That means, quick math, we need 10 more inches of plant available water, which essentially uses up all the rainfall we have. The real key paper, if you don't remember anything else from my talk, please remember this slide. It's the Hudson paper from 1994. And he looked at organic matter effects on available water capacity. And part of the reason this paper is really interesting because he reviews all the papers before him on this subject and why they got it wrong. And I think it was actually a very good review, because several earlier papers had done things like mix peat moss with soil at different rates and then looked at the plant available water. And he said, no, we don't want to do something like that. We want to look at natural soils of very similar texture, because texture, the amount of sand, silt, and clay, has a big effect on how much water the soil can hold. And so he took data from the Soil Survey Center and looked at soils of very similar textures with different amounts of natural or native organic matter, and came up with this analysis, which disagreed generally with the prevailing view at the time. In essence, the bottom of the curve, the black line, is the permanent wilting point regression, And the top black line is the field capacity. So that shaded area between those two black lines is the plant available water, or he called it the available water capacity. So the farther right you go, the higher your organic matter content, the more plant available water you have. And that's a lot more, mainly due to the increase in field capacity. Because at the wet end, if you think about organic matter, think about something like peat moss or a potting mix. It's very spongy and fibrous. It doesn't weigh a lot, but it absorbs and holds water, a lot of water. Actually, it holds more water than it weighs itself. So it's very good at the wet end. At the dry end, the permanent wilting point, texture really controls the amount of water held in small, fine pores. And so the effect of organic matter is less. And he did this for three different textural classes, and I listed the states that he drew this data from. The red arrow is sort of where we've been going in that available water capacity. As we lose organic matter from our soils, we're losing plant available water, the ability to store water. Green arrow is the direction we need to be going, which is, I think, directly related to organic agriculture, where you have the opportunities. One of the goals of organic agriculture is to enhance sustainability and increase the organic matter in the soil. This is the opportunity we have to reach some of those yield goals when we're in a situation where we need more plant available water. We have to be able to not only get it in the soil, but hold it in the soil so that it's there when the plants need it. Put in a carbon cycle slide to show how complicated it is, and then talk about just really how simple increasing soil organic matter. It's all about how great inputs you have and how fast your decomposition is. It boils down to that, really. If you have a lot of inputs, but if your system accelerates decomposition, you may not gain anything. Likewise, you could have low inputs, but if your practice is slow decomposition, you can enhance your soil organic matter. So it's all about inputs and rates of decomposition. For this audience, I think everyone's pretty well familiar with the goals of organic agriculture, but again, it's very very consistent with the idea of soil carbon sequestration to enhance soil quality. Yeah, this slide I have some regrets about now, based on the previous talks today, but you know, the sides have gone back and forth. Does it increase soil carbon? Does it not? So maybe it is pretty balanced right now. Organic systems definitely increase organic inputs. That's a large part of it. Or maybe not increase inputs, but recycle the organic material in the system, whether it's crop residue. But many of them also involve manure and compost additions, green manure, crop residue. Actually, I put in biochar, not realizing it. Biochar is even illegal. Is it? Yeah. Okay. So that's good. That's the good. That's got the three green stars there, right? The slow decomposition part, that's, I think, the challenge for organic systems, and I think we've seen that. The idea that there are so many tillage passes, and we know that tillage disturbance increases CO2 fluxes, and it is generally going to lead to loss of organic matter. However, there's one caveat there, in that all of those studies were done in non-organic systems. Those were done in conventional systems, and we know carbon quality and characteristics may very well be different in organic systems. And I think that's probably a really good research need right there, is to look to see that indeed those disturbances, those tillage practices in organic systems, see those same high fluxes of CO2 that have been observed in conventional systems. And there's also been discussion about erosion. Cindy can tell you, I get on a little soapbox when I talk about erosion. It gets pretty ugly sometimes, so I'll try to tone it down a little bit. But the term tolerable soil loss really, really bothers me. 5 tons per acre per year is an inch of topsoil in 33 years. That is not tolerable under any definition. So I think we just have to totally reverse our way of thinking about, let's just allow slow soil degradation. We have to turn that around. We have to think about, let's talk about how fast can we improve the quality of our soil, not how much degradation we're going to allow. It's not tolerable. It's intolerable. I'm off the box now. Thank you. Maybe I'll stay on longer next time. So I guess we've talked already a lot about organic production and carbon sequestration. This paper by Marriott and Wander did a nice job of summarizing the studies, available studies in the U.S., and they also broke it down into different classes and nitrogen as well. But on average, a 14% increase in soil organic carbon compared to conventional systems. And this was a review of studies in America. This Spiebel report, which I guess came out okay, includes some work from Europe as well. And I like the top figure. I'm sorry if you can't read that. But basically, they were looking at greenhouse gases. Red is bad, green is good. And for their analysis, it basically came down to an organic system generally had greater greenhouse gas production unless you were sequestering carbon with it. So soil carbon sequestration was really the key. It tipped the balance between whether this was a net positive or net negative in terms of net greenhouse gas fluxes. And their review found studies, you know, that went both ways, where they were positive and negative, and again, swinging on whether or not your system could sequester carbon. Cindy, in an earlier talk, introduced this study, and this is where I sort of enter into the organic world in terms of research. The organic water quality study that was just started in central Iowa. The focus really being on subsurface water quality, tile drainage in particular. So there's a tile drain set up in these series of plots. And those are the rotations and some of the infrastructure at the site. And of course, since the site's been established, we've been dealing with droughts and floods. So just for an average type year, wouldn't that be sweet? Next year, yes, okay. My role in this study has been in soil water and carbon. So we have these access tubes where we're measuring soil water down to a meter. That's the delta T PR2. And then we're also measuring soil CO2 fluxes with the PP Systems EGM4. And when we do that, we also measure the shallow soil water content with that Campbell Scientific HS2. So our whole strategy here is to simultaneously look at some of the carbon fluxes, some of the dynamics in the different cropping systems, and then at the same time look at the soil water dynamic through the root zone, and especially at the surface where it's much more dynamic. This is just a taste of some of the data, the different systems where we were measuring the profile water content with that PR2 probe. We have some of these that are automated, so they're out there measuring soil water content continuously, and then we make survey measurements in all the plots with these probes. Strategically is the word I like to use, which means when I can and when I think it'll be interesting. The students have been really helping out in an area that's going to be really interesting. This is a view of a system called a high prop, which replaces a hanging water column and pressure plate systems that we were using to measure plant available water in the past. This is a dynamic system that gives you continuous measure. So our goal here is to collect cores from the plots, make the measurements, and then we can take the soil out, measure the organic carbon content, and do other measurements to try and look at the effects of these different cropping systems, not only the amount of carbon, but perhaps the characteristics of that carbon and exactly how it affects the plant available water. And this is just a taste of some of the data, which is really sweet. It's all automated. You get a continuous curve. Right, the way forward. I hope I've convinced you soil organic matter is important for lots of different reasons. Maybe you didn't need any convincing. We improve soil biophysical quality. The focus, especially during these drought years, it was really easy to get people's attention when you talk about plant available water. But I think the idea here is the most coveted win-win situation of we get higher yields and we get those ecosystem services that go along with organic matter. Research is needed. We need to provide the kind of data that justifies advocating these practices. And on the other hand, we don't want to shrink away from research and things like erosion. I mean, we have to be frank about the realities of the potential at soil degradation, not only in organic systems, but in all systems. And there seems to be some sort of complacency about erosion right now. It seems like we have higher priorities. I think erosion should remain a high priority. And, of course, the view should be long. We need to be thinking long term. We have to deal with sustainability issues. The challenges are there. And our view is very often very much short term. And we have to pose this all in the long view. That's all I have. So thank you.
Okay.
Tom left some time for questions.
Well, you know, when you're comparing treatments at a site, of course, they all have the same climate. But I think going from location to location, some people have referred to some of the differences, but I think that is an important issue. I had that slide. It's about the extremes, not about the averages, and that's very much true about things. If you think about like rainfall patterns, you can have an average year, and I think our rain this year may be kind of average in Iowa, but we had some places 11 inches in June. It was flooding everywhere and really disrupted planting. So that I think that would add more detail to the interpretation of some of the results. So you should have a weather station at your site. Back in the corner, it's Jeff.
Tom, if you will, if you know your data, your site, some other things that you measure any of the water systems,
The question is, have we measured water use efficiency in the organic water quality? And no, we haven't. We don't have the continuity of measurements that would allow us to do that. There is a dream out there, and if anyone from a funding agency is here, we've been playing with some canopy chambers in another study. And since this is small plot work that's not amenable to eddy covariance or Bowen ratio micrometeorology techniques, it does have electricity and would be suitable for canopy chamber work, which would be very much of interest to us.
Okay. One quick question, and then we've got to move on to our next speaker.
Yeah, I work in the West of soils with like one half to 1.5%. Do you think those two lines would be continuous? They pretty much stop at above one.
The question is, for really low organic matter soils, would that trend in plant-available water continue on down at lower organic matter contents?
Yeah. The whole range was like 0.5 to 1.5.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know that. I'm afraid I'll have to defer.
I was telling you.
Okay. Well, if there's any further questions for Tom, find him at his poster. He's headed out to present his poster right now.